Hi, guys. Welcome to No Quitters with Dan Ray
and Benny Salcido. So today we're going to introduce a little bit about who we are and what we do. And we're going to talk about the No Quitters podcast.
Absolutely. So this is basically episode zero, guys. We're going to be talking about where I came from, where Benny came from. Basically, we're going to dive into each other's lives. We're completely different people. We're completely different styles, different attitudes. And you guys are going to get to know us a little bit so that you guys can relate to why we started this podcast.
Absolutely. So Dan, let's just dive right into it. So where did you grow up? And tell us a little bit about how you grew up.
I grew up in Huntington Beach. My dad, he used to live in Huntington Beach, and that was probably like about 5 years. But between Mexico, Michoacan,
okay,
and California, basically Huntington Beach in Santa Ana.
Okay.
Right. So we're growing up, it was basically just those places, but I kept on going back to Mexico. So my dad was starting out living in Mexico, and he was building out there.
Okay.
So he would send me back and forth when I was young.
Is there a reason why he would send you back and forth?
He was probably trying to party out here or something.
Okay. All right.
But I mean, as far as what I grew up with though, my dad, Latino, right? He was a businessman, right? So at a very young age, he had us door knocking, right? I hear people talking about door knocking and all that stuff. I started door knocking when I was 4 years old, right?
Four.
Yeah. And I remember still door knocking. He would take us to the apartments and sell shoes for construction workers. So that was kind of that. And then from there, it kind of grew to me just... He was very abusive, right? Latino. He always he partied a lot and did a lot of that. But he was a completely different person, right? But full of energy, right? And I don't ever hold anything against him because he made me who I am. I'm really appreciative towards him, you know? Yeah. And if there's one thing that he showed me is how not to quit. Because I always saw my dad coming in, going into work really early and also working all day. Staying up all night, you know? So he partied and did everything. Worked long hours, partied, and then did it over and over again.
Wow.
My mom worked hard too. She worked three jobs, right? Yeah. So I kind of left the house when I was about, 11? I had an uncle who had been a heroin addict, and he got me into heroin when I was 11.
At 11?
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
So talk about starting strong, right? I didn't drink and then go to weed and then grow my way up there. I pretty much started with heroin, man.
Fuck.
Yeah. It was something difficult because heroin was instantly addicted.
Yeah.
Right? So.
And at 11 years old, what are you, like in the fourth grade, fifth grade?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Dude, I was riding bikes at that time. Like, right. What the fuck?
And wow. I was already getting out, trying to get off of drugs because the next day I was already immediately addicted. From there, pretty much rabbled into me trying to fit in with different crowds, trying to gang bang and do all kinds of stuff. And in the 90s, everything was crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about this in the other episodes, but that was basically my first experience, right? So both my moms were so busy working, they weren't really paying attention to us, right? And they were separated. So it was like, go with your mom, go with your dad, go with your mom, go with your dad. And they're both a little bit abusive, right? But like I said, I never hold anything against them because if they knew better, they would have done better.
Would have done it.
Right?
Right.
But it's so easy to just point fingers when you don't have kids, when you don't have three jobs, when you don't have any bills, you don't have anything. Obviously, right. It's stressful. Now that I'm older, I'm like, shit, it's not as easy as we thought, you know?
Right.
But it's when you're young, you're so quick to point fingers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, after that, I caught a case when I was like 12.
You had your first run-in with the law.
Yeah.
At 12 years old.
At 12.
What happened there?
I was with a friend, and I guess his dad was fighting. His dad had a lot of guns in his like closet, so we ran to get a gun. And then when I get out with a gun, I get smacked right away. So there was a guy trying to he took the gun away from me. He was about to shoot me. I grab a shovel and I hit him with the shovel.
Oh damn!
And that was pretty much. That was before I was even a teen.
Wow.
So after crazy. That, I went to Juvie. I spent about 8 months there. Yeah.
At 12 years old in juvenile hall for 8 months, already yeah. serving time.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So you know what's the craziest part, man? I was one of the oldest kids in there.
Really? In that yeah. where you were?
Yeah, where I was at. It was about 30 kids.
You were 12 years old. How many siblings do you have? And are you the oldest? Where are you at?
So I'm the oldest. Then it's my sister. And then it's my younger brother, Ray. They basically stayed with mom and dad, right? So we had a completely different life. I'm the only one that kind of took it to the next level. I'm kind of the black sheep of the family, if you say.
Got it. And at what age did you start going back to Mexico when they started sending you? So now I have an idea as to why they started right. sending you to Mexico. Because I know a lot of people I grew up with that they were not going on vacation. They would like send them to the grandparents or the right. uncle because they were in trouble here.
Right.
So
right.
at what age did you start going to Mexico?
So the first time I actually went, I get out of juvie, right? And I was not even 13 yet. I was about to be 13. And I go right back into heroin, right? Oh. Right back into heroin. I was out in the streets doing all kinds of stupid shit to get money, right? And then at that age, something hit me where I'm like, you know what? I don't want to live this life. You know, I don't want this. I don't want out there robbing whatever, you know what I mean? Going into people's garages or doing stupid shit, you know, at uh-huh. a young age. I didn't want to live that life anymore. So I always heard that in Mexico, people get better.
Uh-huh.
Right? So this guy was sent to Mexico. And when he came back, he was different and this and that. And so I asked my mom, hey, I asked my dad, and my dad wasn't even talking to me, right?
Because you got in trouble.
He was a little bit more emotional, right? He did visit me when I was in, and he was pouring his eyes. I mean, he was pouring himself out. He was a little bit more emotional, but he also had his own things. He was dealing with his own things.
Got it.
He was also a heroin addict. Okay. He partied. He partied a lot, you know. So, no, but I went to my mom, and my mom didn't really have the funds. So she's like, yeah, I'll send you to Mexico, but you got to wait a month till I gather enough money. And by the time they sent me to Mexico, I had just turned 13.
Hmm.
They're like, hey, you're going to stay here for a week. And
you didn't expect to have to stay there. They had to lie to you to get you over there.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. You'll stay there for a week, come back. Wow. By the time you come back, you'll be okay. And I mean, not realizing I was like going from a place that was bad to now you're in Michoacán.
Yeah.
Right? A whole bunch of different drugs.
What town or what city did you go to in Michoacán?
I was in, se llama Tacatzcuaro. It's a little town next to Zamora, between Zamora and Cotija.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what was life like there when you arrived there?
So it was completely different, man. I started living with my grandma, but I was going through rehab, right?
Over there.
Over there. So they had me with pills and everything in the house. And I was getting off of heroin was something horrible. I was with cold chills, sweating for like 3 months, you know, until like third month, someone gave me some weed that kind of eased the pain. And then I started smoking weed
over there.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that kind of eased the pain. And obviously in Mexico, everybody kind of knows each other,
uh-huh.
right? Such a small town, huge ears. Everybody knows everybody. So everybody already knew the reason why I got sent over there. So no one will let their kids hang around with me.
Oh, damn.
You know, and it's a town like maybe 4,000 or 5,000 people, but no, everybody knew your business. So when you were walking through the streets, they kind of see you, right? They see you differently. Oh, here comes this guy. They don't let their kids hang around with you. They don't let anybody, not even the adults will hang around with me. I didn't like the way my grandma was treating me, right? Because I had to work over there,
uh-huh.
right? And
at 13, you were a laborer already.
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah, there's no office jobs.
Right. So tell us the kind of labor you were doing or that they had you doing that was normal in a town or in Mexico at that time.
So you would work the fields, right? That was my first job. I would work the fields, the sugarcane fields.
Okay.
Right. And first they burn them and then they chop them down with a machine, but they leave like about this much in the bottom, the trunk, el tronco, right? And I would go with a machete and just chop those off, right? And basically you're preparing for the next year, right? Next season.
Right.
And I did that. That was my first job. I started all aggressive. Ah, this is easy. You know, I leave everybody behind. And then like 30 minutes into it, my hands were all bleeding, man. Bleeding. I mean, I had
ripped
little kid hands. You know what I mean? They knew nothing about that labor. I remember going to my grandpa and I tell him like, hey, I can't do this shit no more. He's like, why? What happened? They're all making fun of me because I started all aggressive.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, look at my hands. They're all bleeding. He's like, okay. You want to go home? Go grab that horse. Right? And I'm like, which one? The black one? He's like, yeah. And everybody's looking at me strange. And I'm like, well, why is everybody looking at me like that? You know? I knew nothing about working, let alone riding a horse. So I get in the horse and the horse already knew how to get home. My grandpa said something and the horse just
took off.
Right. I was pulling back there. I just pulled back. I was pulling back.
And he was hauling ass.
He was just hauling ass, man, with the neck like this. And I was, yeah, that was quite an experience. But after that, I think I left my grandma's house because it was different. They were always looking at me like I was lower and I was a drug addict and this and that. And sometimes in your own family, they talk more than other people, mm-hmm. right? Other people kind of have some empathy for you because you're a kid. At the end of the day, you're still a kid.
And you felt they didn't have that for you.
No, they didn't have any of that. None of that. So I left and I just lived on my own since I was 14.
And where'd you go?
My dad had a house
there.
He had a house there. It wasn't completed, but it was still livable.
Okay.
He had an old mattress. I stayed in the old mattress there for a year or two. No electricity. I would shower in buckets. You know, all the Mexico stuff. No hot water, none of that stuff. All that stuff was a luxury. You know what I mean? Yeah. If I wanted light, I will turn on the candle. Right?
Did they have an outhouse for the bathroom?
No.
Or was there a bathroom with toilet, everything?
There was a bath. Yeah, everything was nice there. I mean, but it wasn't completed, right?
There's no running water.
No running water. I have to get buckets and kind of just push everything down.
Wow.
Then from there, once again, it hit me. I'm like, I don't want this life because anywhere I go, no one wants to talk to me. No one wants to say
anything. You were anything. The outcast.
I was the outcast. I remember walking in the middle of the town one time. I hadn't gotten a girlfriend. I walk in the middle of the town, La Plaza, right? And everyone was laughing at me because I'd had no money, right? So I would always wear almost like, they already kind of guessed what I was going to wear because I only had like two pants and like two shirts and mostly was muscle shirts because I didn't really have enough money. I was providing for myself. My dad didn't want to provide for me because he's like, what, you're going to spend it in drugs?
Right.
And
so they couldn't trust you with money.
Nothing. So I had to work for myself and I didn't have enough money. They paid very little.
And at that time, were you still doing drugs or were you already clean after that rehab?
So I was smoking weed. There was not really much, right? Smoking weed. I mean, I would drink a beer here and there, right? But I remember walking towards in the middle of the plaza and everybody was making fun of me. And I just remember looking at everybody and I'm like, damn. Like that day when they're making fun of me, I realized I'm really messing up with my life. And then again, it hit me. I don't want this life for me again.
Okay.
From there, I changed. Right? Usually.
Ahí te cayó el 20 and you're like, fuck this.
Oh, fuck this. Exactly. Fuck this. And I left there, went to Chapala. I have an uncle over there.
Okay. So you left the town completely, said, I'm going to start fresh.
Yeah, I went up there. With
At Chapala. How old?
I was like 15.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like 15 then. And then I went to Chapala with my uncle, but my uncle was involved in bigger things. You know, the first day I go there, I see somebody getting shot and you know what I mean? It's a whole different vibe, but he got rid of all my clothes, got me some Levi's, some botas, sombrero, you know, I'm already dressing.
You're more ranchero now.
Yeah, now I'm dressing like a ranchero as opposed to a cholo. It was different. I was there for about, he owned El Mercadito there.
Okay.
And he had a lot of houses there, but he was just in different businesses, you know? So I was just there for a couple months. So by the time I come back, I go back to my town, like three, four months after, I was different, right? But people
different mindset, different everything.
And that's when I put myself back in school.
When you went back to the town,
mm-hmm.
you went back to school.
Okay. A la secundaria.
And what was that like?
La secundaria was, I mean, it was hard to get in, right? Because they already know my background.
Right.
But since they had done me a favor to let me in there, I would have to work after school, basically doing all the yard and all the... At the school. So I would basically work for them for free after school. If you want to come to school, we'll let you come into school.
That's what you're going
to
do.
But you're going to have to clean the whole yard. And it was massive, you know? So I had to do all that stuff. Yeah.
You were the only one.
Only one.
How long did you do that?
I did that for a whole year till I graduated.
Nice.
Yeah. But I didn't quit, you know? So yeah, you want me to do this? I got to change my life. So after school, I don't have no time for anything. I don't know if they did it intentionally or not. Right. But I didn't have no more time. Right. So after school, I will stay there and work. And by the time I was done with everything, I'll be tired and go home.
Did it ever occur to you that maybe that was their way of keeping you out of trouble? Maybe. Because you were exhausted after that. Like, you didn't want to do anything other than go rest.
Right. Right. Exactly. So, I mean, that might have been the reason.
And it worked.
And it worked. And then from there, about 50% of the students made it to La Prepa, which is high school. Right. And in high school, high school was badass, right? That would be a whole day thing. I wake up at 5 a.m. and I have to drive like an hour, you know, on the bus and then come back late.
So you had to take el camión to go to school. Yeah. That was in a different town or
different
what?
Different town. It's in the city.
Oh,
right,
okay.
Right. So about 30 minutes or 45 if there's no traffic.
Every day.
Yeah. La Prepa was really good, actually. I mean, you go to the cafeteria and you're having tacos de birria and you're having all kinds of different stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean? Nothing like here. They had the best birria. There are people that come from outside just to try to get our birria in our school.
Wow.
So imagine on Mondays, everybody's hungover, including the teachers, and you're just having tacos de birria. It's a different vibe.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, I was there by myself. So what I would do for money is every year I got 3 months off. And I would come back to the U.S., work, and then go back.
Now, when you came back to the U.S., there was that risk of you going back to...
I think that was out of my mind already, because I already had a girlfriend out there. So my mindset was just...
So you were committed.
Yeah, my mindset was just come work, and I would work day and night. You know, I would work 20 hours.
To save up money.
To save up money.
And what kind of work did you do?
I did Target 1 year. I did with my father. He used to do airplane parts. I was helping there. I would work the swap meets on the weekends because that's what my dad had, a swap meet business, mm-hmm. selling shoes, and just different jobs. I would help other people in the swap meets. That was the weekends, and then at night I would work at Target and other places. It's just random jobs.
And you did that all through high school.
Come for
3 months and go back.
Yeah, save up enough and then just go back.
And that would last you.
That would last me enough.
Like camión and food.
Yes, yes.
And you always took care of yourself at that point,
mm-hmm.
from 15 years on. Mm-hmm. Actually, younger than that.
Yeah, I mean, my mom, when she saw me going to school, every once in a while, she would send me some money. And so would my dad. That would kind of help out.
Because they saw you doing better now.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I mean, it's different. You know, still the people in my hometown, they wouldn't let their kids hang around. So
They
still wouldn't.
Even after you were older and doing better and going to school.
No.
So they just blackballed you and that's it.
That's it. That's it. You're not allowed to hang out with nobody. And that was that till all the way to high school.
But when you went to high school, when you were there, different place.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody knew your story.
I had friends over there.
You had friends. It was normal.
I had friends out there. People would allow me. They would invite me to their house. Completely different vibe. So they would treat you better over there. But when I went home, it was that black cloud of like, you know, it's just this guy.
They put a label on you there.
Yeah, immediately. That's how it is, you know. And yeah, I mean, I was telling Nicole, my girlfriend, not too long ago, there's a guy that came and asked me for a loan, right? For his house. And I'm like, you know, they had a restaurant in Mexico once and I would always go at night and buy me like a burger or a little something small to eat. Pasenar. And they asked me, hey, can you just not come here anymore? because you make our business look bad.
What?
Right, because they didn't want that kind of person in their business because other clients wouldn't go there if I was there, kind of deal. And I was like, man, they really treated me fucked up. But yeah, I mean, that showed me a lot, right? Just grit, you know? And I really didn't care about what people thought about me back then, let alone now.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
At this point, I do what I want. But I mean, as far as a childhood, man, I had a pretty rough, but I love every part of my childhood, you know? There's a story that I tell everybody. I don't know if I told you before, but when I was young, right, my dad really taught me a lesson when my dad would always teach me random ass lessons. And that's how I saw it, you know? One time I saw these kids fighting, right? And he's like, what do you think about these kids? And they were finished fighting already. And I'm like, they both suck. He's like, oh yeah? Okay. He calls the kids over. Hey, come here. My son says you guys suck.
No saben pelear.
You don't know how to fight. So he fought them against me. They woke my ass. And then after they woke my ass, my dad woke my ass too.
For letting them whoop your ass.
For letting them whoop your ass. What happened? Right? And then after that, every weekend or every time my dad had a gathering, he would grab the kids and they would make us fight. Right?
Fucking fight club.
Fucking fight club when I was a little kid, man. But wow. One, I mean, I learned how to fight.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I learned is not to have an opinion on shit that doesn't really matter
shut
to me.
It's
just shut the fuck up. It has nothing to do with me. I mean, I better shut up. You know what I mean? But my dad always had those kind of lessons throughout my life, man. So
very unique for teaching.
Yeah, very unique, man. He was when he showed me how to drive. He had gone home like at 4 a.m. from a party, el baile,
pedo.
And he wakes me up. He's like, "Hey, wake up!" And I'm like, "What?" He's like, "I need you to drive." I was like 10, 11. That was really, you know what I mean? I need you to drive this truck to the swamp. I mean, I'm from Santa Ana. Right, I was in
here.
Santa,
that was here.
That was here, bro. I was younger. Shit. You know, that was before I left the house. Yeah. You know, he tells me, drive the truck to the swamp meet. So about 30 miles or maybe, no, not 30 miles, maybe about 10 miles from Santa Ana to Costa Mesa, West Coast College.
Oh, damn.
Right? He's like, "Hey, I need you to drive the truck over there." And I look at him like, "What the fuck?" And he looks at me back, "What? Are you afraid or what?" And I already had learned my lesson because he fought me, you know? Oh. And I'm like, "No, I had some little pride." So I said, "No, I'm not afraid." He's like, "If you're afraid, take your sister." Remember, I'm the oldest. My sister's younger than me and shorter. So we did it.
You took Joanna.
I took Joanna. Well, I needed her because I wasn't tall enough to.
She was eyes.
She was my eyes, man. I wasn't tall enough to press the gas and see at the same time, you know?
Ooh.
So, but I took it over there, and then he shows up like at 1:00 and he's like, "Okay, I need you to, when this is over, I need you to pack up and take it back." And I was like, "Bro, at this time you're good, you know?" So I took it back. I don't know if he was looking for an insurance claim or nothing, but I learned how to drive.
Fuck.
There's your lesson, you know?
Wow.
My dad was always like, "That person, just do it. Don't think about it, just do it. You're going
to
learn."
And
learn
then from
as
then
go.
On, it became a norm to send you driving somewhere?
Yeah.
To work or whatever?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm grateful for that. Obviously, I'm grateful for my mom, and they both have a lot of things and a lot of struggles they went through.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, I mean, I have my stories where I've lived, I'm 41 now, and I lived a different life like pretty much every 10 years, right? So, I mean, that's me after high school, right? Right when I finished high school, I already had my first wife pregnant. So when I graduate, I already have the ticket after my graduation. I already have the everything time where I pick up my certificate,
uh-huh.
Get in the car, drive to the airport to come back over here to work. So I can support my child.
You had a kid coming.
I had a kid coming. I don't know if it was a girl or
at
boy.
17, 18.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, she's going to be 23 this year and I'm, you know, do the math.
Wow.
And that was me up until high school. But how about you, man?
Wow. I think we should keep going with you because we're on the roll on where we're taking it. And then you can do the interview of me separate.
Absolutely.
Because I think we can run it that way. What do you guys think?
Yeah, because I feel like you're already warmed up.
Right. Mm-hmm. And he's... And now we can just keep it going from there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so here you have a kid coming. Mm-hmm. That was at like 17, 18. And what were you doing for work at that time now?
So my ex, she has her parents and they're very old school. They always think, stay at the same job. And then eventually, if you keep on doing a good job, you're going to get promoted.
Yeah.
And just keep on going up that ladder, right? So... I started living with one of her aunts up in Monrovia or Canoga Park up there.
Okay, in the valley or something?
In the valley.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, these people were rude. Like, I couldn't even lay in their bed because I was not wasting it, but using it. They didn't really want me to use it during the day, only at night. They were weird. One of those people that just really focused on them. They're completely different now. Great people. Right. But back then they were very stingy and much like that.
Did they come from nothing?
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're doing good. They came from nothing, but they're doing good. But they went through that little phase for themselves.
Of lack of you're going to ruin it or it costs me money.
Like, exactly. It looks
stay
good.
Stay off of it.
Stay off of it. Only use it when you're asleep, sleep. Yeah. Kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 The lack of or not having growing
right.
up makes these people different. Yeah.
Yeah. And so from there, I was working at a place where we did, what was it? It was like products for cars, like the shine for the outside of the tires and everything, all the products for the cars, right?
Okay.
Shampoos and leather conditioners. We mixed all that stuff. And that thing was from like 6 a.m. to like 3:30.
It was a chemical company?
It was a chemical company.
Okay.
And we would do all the mix.
Okay.
Right. And big ass
cylinders, drums, big 50 gallon, whatever.
Exactly. Drums. Big ones. And that was, I did that. And then after that, I would get off at 3:30 and at 4, I would work at a restaurant till like 12:30. And I did that for about maybe 6 months, Mm-hmm. But again, her aunt just kept on getting on my nerves. So I left her house, went somewhere else, and the aunt just kept on pushing me. And she was one of those aunts that are all up in your business. You know what I mean? Those people that hate you for no reason. Mm. Right? And I'm like, you know what? Fuck this.
Could it have been still the old label?
She really didn't know me, but maybe. It might have been.
Because it's already, I mean, that was 5 years later, mm-hmm. 6 years later, and you already had stopped that.
Right. Exactly. I had stopped that. I was clean. But I had a mission. I had to take care of my wife back then, and my coming child. Oh. Right. So my mindset was just on that. But that was in Canoa Park. Obviously I was working way too much. No one comes with instructions, man. I was going through marriage. I was going through a lot of that stuff. I'm like, man,
kid coming.
Yeah. Everything's going in there. And I had just graduated high school, you know?
Yeah.
So I go straight into that and I see like there's no future here. Like these guys are all up in my business. At that point I had gotten really good at the restaurant work and everything. I was getting a promotion on the first job and promotion on the second job, but I'm like, this is not a life. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? A lot of people get stuck trying to make a living.
Punching a clock,
right? And never live. You know what I mean? They're always trying to make a living, but never live. And there's a lot of those, you know what I mean?
Yep.
At a young age, I realized like, this is not a life. Like I was, no. So I was already having arguments with my baby mama because I was never there. And obviously I was working and she wanted my time and so on and so forth. There was no days off,
7 days a week.
7 days a week. 7 days. Restaurants are the busiest on the weekend. Yeah, so they needed me, you know? But I came back and in Mexico, I had gotten a certificate for, and la prepa for químico laboratorista, kind of like, you know, I wanted to be a doctor.
Okay.
Right. And I wanted to come over here and be, and kind of finish my doctorate, you know, go to school to become a doctor. But that wasn't that easy. I had a newborn, and things. I had to pay for bills. I had to pay for everything. So obviously that was too far fetched. So I call my mom, you know, just to see if she knows anybody. She's like, "Well, your tia has a job, you know." And I started working at a lab right here in Irvine where we used to mix medicine, right? Mm-hmm. And we did a lot of kind of like penicillin, but stronger stuff, right? Big bags. And it was we were sending it over to overseas because there was a war going on. But again, I was working 20 hours, 22 hours a day, you know?
For that company.
I mean, they paid me a lot better,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I was living good, but I was never home.
Wow.
I was never home. I had my baby was just a baby, you know, my first one, a couple months.
Now, mm-hmm. When you were working those long hours, did there come a time when you said, I don't want this?
So at one point I did go, I'm like, I got to do something else. Yes, I got to do something else. So I started taking some time off and I was like, shit. Real estate, right? Real estate.
How old now?
Probably 21, 22.
Okay.
20, 21.
Okay.
Young. And I was thinking about real estate, but I was like, man, I mean, I hear people in real estate make good money, you know? So I started taking a course. And at that time I actually left that job and went to work for Radio Shack.
Okay.
Right. Radio Shack had a commission structure back then. I made $80,000 in 6 months.
Wow.
Part time.
You're a good natural salesperson.
Oh, natural, man. I was selling. I would go out there. And you know how people are like, oh, my business card this, my business card that. I would print business cards on paper. Yeah. Cut them off, and then just take them to Del Taco, Taco Bell, everywhere. Hey, my name is this. You need a cell phone? Help me up. Yeah, you know, hit me up. Here's my card.
Back then, it was Radio Shack to get phones and stuff.
I was selling everybody, Verizon, wow. Sprint, everybody. So I was selling all. They had to change their commission structure because I was making so much money. Like I said, $80,000 in like 6 months.
Nobody had ever done that.
Nobody's ever done that. And I was at a very small store. They moved me to a bigger store where it was a mall. They knocked this mall down in Laguna Hills now, where I made more money there, right? But they had already changed the structure. While I was working part-time there, I got hit up by someone that worked at First Team, realtors.
Okay.
They're like, hey, man, you speak really good English, really good Spanish. What are you doing here? You know? And of course, they didn't know how much money I was making, but it was peanuts compared to real estate.
Right.
Right.
Which you could've made.
Yeah, exactly. So I start taking a course for real estate, right? And then they're like, well, we'll hire you right now, right? But they're like, I've never heard commission only. So I heard they make good money. They make good everything.
Yeah, but you didn't know you weren't going to get paid if you didn't sell anything.
I didn't hear commission. Yeah. So right before I was about to go there, they're like, hey, just remember it's commission only. And I'm like, commission only? I never heard about this shit, you know? They're like, yeah, if you don't sell anything, you're not going to get paid. Yeah, and I'm like, well, how long does it take for you to get paid? I mean, sometimes it could take months, right? And even though it was a subprime days, right, little did I know, everybody was qualifying.
What year was this?
20 years
2004, ago. 2004,
2005? Yeah. Okay. Little did I know this shit, you know?
Yeah.
It could have been faster. You know, it could have been faster. But that kind of pushed me back. I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready for that. I have a newborn, you know, I don't know if I want to do that right now. Uh-huh. So my younger brother, he's like, well, fuck it, I'll do it. And he looked for a place that was closer to my mom's house. Right. So it was like walking distance for him. And sure enough, it took him as a loan officer, it took him like 6 months, right? To get paid. And I remember like, he would be like, hey, can you let me borrow money for this? And I'm like, sure, here you go. You know, just to support him and whatever I could.
Get him going, yeah.
Right. Well, he got his first paycheck. But when he got his first paycheck, I was like, let me see it. That was enough for me to.
You're like, I'm there.
Fuck this. it was a lot, man. I mean, this company was right here off where I had my old office, right here off the City Drive.
Yeah.
Very old school. You would dial out of the white pages. Right. That's how they'll start you. You don't know shit.
Cold calls.
That's cold call. right? When people say, oh, I got a cold call, I mean, you have targeted data. Yeah, you know they own a house.
This was, nobody knew nothing.
Nothing. You got a little number of letters you could barely see, and you would dial, like, you were lucky if you got through a page, but you would dial all day, right? And I was dialing all day.
Yeah.
All damn day. I mean, it was like, all right, I've done sales face to face, right? I've never done sales over the phone.
Over the phone. You got to be damn good.
You got to be damn good. Especially when you start, right? Because you don't have any skill.
Yeah.
So you got to compensate time for skill.
Yep.
Right? So I would put all the time. I would be the first one to get there, the last one to get out. And I did that for months, man. No paycheck. I couldn't get a client in there, man. And I was not the only one, you know? I would keep on getting some clients and I'll take the deal like, hey, does this client qualify? Because we had an underwriting desk. I'll get the scenario and take it. And they'll be like, sorry, man, this guy doesn't qualify. This one doesn't qualify, right? I know little about loans and anything. Nowadays, I was like, now if I think back, I'm like, man, why didn't you guys make this qualify? Everybody was qualifying back then. But they had their little process. It was Home Loans Direct. That was the name of the company, Home Loans Direct. Yeah.
And you ended up doing loans for
them.
For how long at that time?
For about four years, five, before it crashed, right? Okay. I remember when I got my first lead. Yeah, I remember when I got my first lead. I was so excited. I'm like, this one looks like it's qualified. Because after so many fails, you kind of start forming like an idea of what qualifies.
Okay.
Virginia Swagger. That was her name. I remember that
one.
First client. I go to my closer and be like, hey, I got a lead now. He's like, oh, looks at me. He's like, come back later. Because they were assholes, you know? So I kept on bugging him for a week. Finally, he calls him, picks up the phone and calls a client. And he fucks up on the name. Instead of calling her Virginia, he calls her Virginia.
Fuck.
And the client is like, excuse me? And hangs up. Loses my client like this. And I was so pissed. So pissed. But they had commercials at night. So I, you know, after that, they allowed me to get phone calls.
Leads.
Now I was like, all right, I don't have to cold call no more. So they allowed me to get leads. And I pretty much, before the market crashed, I was the number one salesperson there. I was beating everybody.
Wow. Now, at what point did you decide to start your own mortgage company?
Right after that.
Being in the business for how long?
Four or five years around there.
And you said, I'm doing it. Fuck it.
Well, the market had crashed.
Right.
Right. And everybody was losing their shit. You know, a lot of people were losing everything, mm-hmm. everything. Mm-hmm. And there was this guy, Chris, who's like, hey, Daniel, come sell this for me. He was selling loan mods, and he had a whole bunch of people doing loan modifications before it got out of hand.
Yeah.
Right. So it basically people would renegotiate the terms of their loans to something more favorable for the client.
Right.
And initially they were doing a good job, you know? But when all that shit started, I mean, the loss mitigation department was literally like a speck.
They had no idea how to handle the problem that they had put on their plate.
It was a speck in their whole organization, right? Sales was the biggest part.
Of course.
But after that, the loss mitigation department became the biggest.
Yes.
Right? So initially people didn't know what the hell to do, how to do it, none of that stuff. And it was complicated. That's when I started a call center in Colombia.
In Colombia.
Bogota, right?
In 08, 09?
About 8, 09, 10. Because the mass majority of time you were spending on the phone was on hold. You would spend
with the people at the banks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Everything was over the phone, right? Yep. So if you call loss mitigation, you'll be on hold for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours. If you know what I mean? It was bad. So that's how I started getting into the business.
Wow.
By getting into a call center, right?
Yeah.
Then from there, when I was working with these guys, they kind of messed it all up because they were just chewing more than they can handle. And so they got raided and everything. And I just got tired of working for companies. And different companies. First it was this one on the real estate side and the mortgage side. They failed and they just quit. I saw the owner just crumble. And I'm looking and I'm like, fuck, there's got to be something else. Nothing. He shut down his doors, lost his Lambo, lost everything. And then I worked for this other company. He lost everything as well. And then I'm like, you know what? At this point, I'm just going to start my own business, right? And I convinced my younger brother to go and start a business. I'm like, hey, bro, it's time. He didn't really want to. He always wanted to work for somebody else. He's like, nah, man, that's too much problems. I don't want to deal with people. I don't want to do all this and all that. And I pretty much convinced them. And from there, we started a company. And I haven't worked for anyone else ever since.
Now, before you started that company, did it ever occur to you like, fuck it, I'll just go back to punching the clock?
No.
No, that wasn't an option.
No. I don't see myself doing that, no.
Ever. Mm. Once you get a taste for being
I'd rather work 80 hours. Yeah, I would rather work 100 hours for myself than go work 40 hours for somebody else. Mm. You know, it's just that it's in your conscience.
Now, if you were to tell people out there that were thinking of going as becoming their own bosses or starting their own business, what would you tell them as opposed to punching a clock?
I mean, possibilities are always full of challenges, right? You just got to focus on the possibilities, right? You can't let yourself get disappointed over the small challenges, right? Because you're going to have challenges all the time. So you can't allow yourself to get disappointed over the small challenges, but also you can't allow yourself to be deluded by the wins that you have. And what I mean by that is some people have a win and then they celebrate for too long.
Stop chasing.
Exactly.
They stop going after.
So if I would say, that's something that I will tell them.
Wow. Interesting. So you start your own company and how long did it take for you to actually take off where you started doing well?
When I started my first company, it was Jesus. I mean, we start selling right away because I was a salesperson. I was selling myself, right? So I always was selling. That was my thing. But I remember one time we were at the office and it was like 2 in the morning. And I was like, man, this shit is not okay. And I started looking at the team. People were waiting for me to close their clients. Right.
They were not closing them. They were expecting you to close them.
So I have a team of people that just call clients, grab their interest, and then I'll be a closer. Because that's what I was used to seeing, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, at this point, I can't do this.
You can't do it all.
If something happens to me, my business is going to fail.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
It's going to plunge. And at that point, I made a decision. And I remember very clearly, man, I was like, if you want to go fast, go by yourself. But if you want to go far, you got to go with the team, right? And so basically I had to learn everything about business, you know? So I pushed myself out of sales and I would train people how to sell.
Right? How to close themselves.
Yeah. Mm. How to generate interest, how to basically provide value, right? Because it was just me.
Yeah.
You know, so I didn't, it was not really a business. If it's just everything depends on me and something happens to me, it's not
nothing
really a
could
business.
Get done unless you were there.
Exactly. So that's me just creating a position for myself in my own corporation. So I stepped away from sales and I just started training people on how to sell. And that was another bigger decision that I made because it changed who I was. Cause you, as a sales person, you're just that person. You want to be the closer. You want to be number one. And there's no option to be number two.
Yeah. But you were holding yourself back from growing the company.
Well, at that point, I'm like, all right, there's no more going for number one. You just want to be the best that ever did it. You know? And so I stepped away from sales and just started teaching people how to sell. Training people. I had to learn how to train people. I had to learn how to deal with everyone, you know what I mean? And a lot of times you're having a conversation with someone, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Little do you know that you're not just having a conversation with that person, you're having a conversation with that person and all the feelings that that person has.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I had to learn how to deal with people's emotions and, you know, people go through shit, how to listen to people and how to uplift them and how to kind of not brainwash them, but just get them to start thinking differently.
Right.
You know, so that was the first company was New Century. Then I did United Fund.
Okay.
Then from there, I went to Sharp Line, then rebranded to Sharp Loan.
Sharp Loan was in what year?
Sharp Loan was 2014, 13.
Okay. So this was like fast forward like 4 years and you went through four companies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what was different about Sharp Loan?
I had more experience at that point.
Okay.
Right. United Fund, we were doing loans and real estate, but I didn't really get into the real estate side. I was just in the mortgage side. It was more transactional, mm-hmm. right? And there was a lot of refinance. We had been basically call center driven this whole time, right? We would get calls and just close them. And I would have a team of telemarketers and we would get each other pumped up and I can have someone performing within a couple of days, basically. Yeah.
That's when you had the call center in Colombia.
Call center in Colombia and call center here.
Also.
Yeah.
To receive the calls here to make the calls.
To receive the calls. Then once we started getting good here, I shut down Colombia because my friend had passed away. And So everything's still there. I mean, computers and everything is still there, but we started focusing on telemarketers here. Right. But obviously it's a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
Right. And what made that company different was that we were now more experienced. We had a track record of bank statements to now allow us to rent a 10,000 square foot office off the city drive. You know, we had
10,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, at one point we were the number 8 biggest mortgage broker in the country.
Wow.
It was an experience, you know?
Yeah.
It was an experience. You learn a lot where you're going there and you're pushing yourself and every day you're just pushing yourself. I don't really focus on what everyone else is doing. Like right now, people are so focused on the economy this and the economy that and there's this and there's that. But at the end of the day, there's still people closing transactions.
Yep.
You know, you can be one of the complainers or you can be one of the closers.
The closers.
Right?
Right.
But I've always pushed myself, right, to the point. Here's one thing that a lot of people don't understand. The line... People draw the line of success or failure, but people are responsible for that, right? So where I draw that line, that's completely up to me.
Absolutely.
Right? For either one of them, for success and for failure. And a lot of people just blame everything else, right? But at the end of the day, it is my responsibility where I draw this line, right? And every day I continue to get better and better and better. It's kind of like when I go to the gym, one day I go all the way to failure, but the next day I come stronger and just continue to push myself. And so far, I worked all the way to 2016 when I caught that other case.
Okay, so now we're talking about case number two. Case number one was at 10 years old.
Yeah.
Case number two, tell us.
Case number two, man, I was living my life at the most.
Yeah.
Partying the most, doing jujitsu. I did jujitsu for a long time. CrossFit and the gym and working and partying, everything. I was living myself. I was like, man, at that point, my motto was no limits.
And business was thriving.
Yeah, everything was good. You know, I was young. I was making money. I lived in Huntington Beach, right there by the beach, 5-minute walk to Sharky's in downtown HB. And I was living my life at the most. And I would party basically every single day. But it was downtown drinking. It was not like, you know, clubs. Even though I would go to clubs, it was you're in downtown. You're
just
at the bar
spots.
Yeah. To the point where everybody knows you. It was Margarita Mondays, Tacos Tuesdays, Local Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, Sunday.
Every day.
Every day, man. And in Huntington Beach, everyone kind of knows everyone. It's a small community, you mm-hmm. know. Mostly white people, right? I mean, I remember one time I the first day that I moved to Huntington Beach, I walked to the little supermarket there. And they're like, oh my God. And I was like, what the hell? And their guy's like, are you Mexican? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, you're the first Mexican I see here.
Really?
And that was off of 18th Street, a little market off of 18th Street.
And the guy that asked, what was he?
He was white, you know, but there's
shocked.
No. Yeah, he's shocked that I was Mexican. He's like, well, Mexicans in Huntington Beach now.
Wow.
So it's just a small community, but everyone is very friendly, and a lot, there's a lot of entrepreneurs there, right? Uh-huh. Which was great, but was also the downfall because, you know, if you were not trying to convince them to drink, they were trying to convince you to drink, you know? Let's go party. Nah,
that was a lifestyle.
That was a lifestyle. Nah, man, I want to stay in. Nah, come on. Last time you got me in, and that was the whole, I did that for years, man, years. And I mean, everything was good, right? And then I had to move out of there because it was just like, it was too much. I was losing focus on work, right? Wow. At that point, my brother's like, hey, you know what? I think we're good in sales. Why don't you just take some time off? And I'm like, okay. So I started going for my pilot license, right? Which I did. I started going under Corona, going for my pilot license. But then the sales went down. I went back to work, right? And I'm like, listen, if I want to go back to work, I got to move myself out of Huntington Beach because this is really distracting. Uh-huh. So I moved myself up here to Anaheim Hills, right? And this was 2016. It was I moved there 2016. I had an ex-girlfriend. We were very much in love, but we were kind of like very toxic together, you know, because we would drink until we both black out.
Oh, wow.
You know, so it was obviously she was dealing with some shit and I was dealing with some stuff. You know what I mean? I mean, you're drinking when you're drinking, you're both blacking out in your own house is one thing. But we were out there in the streets. You know?
Wow.
I mean, we were disastrous. She would always one up me or try to one up me. And we were always trying to one up each other. You know, if she's out there dancing on the table, I'm up there dancing on the speakers. You know what I mean? And on stage, it was we were both wild. It was that kind of relationship, right? And I had I broken up with her, and so anyways, in December and Christmas, it was actually Christmas Eve 2016. Mm-hmm. You know, I broke up with her. We went to party and she got super drunk, and she's a hairstylist, so she had a lot of gay friends. All the friends that she had were gay. And then I go to the bathroom. When I walk out, one of her best friends, gay guys, is kissing her. I'm like, hey, what the hell? I didn't trip because it's a gay guy. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, I'm like, what the hell, right? And they all start attacking me. And I'm like, I'm walking. That was it for me. I walk away from the relationship. That was like around 8 on Christmas Eve. I didn't even want to go out that day. I go home. I knock out. And then like at 2 in the morning, someone's banging in the back windows, right? I wake up to someone banging in the back windows. Bah, 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 bah. And I'm like, what the hell? Now, this is 2016, and Christmas Day 2016, right? My pops had passed away a month before in November, right? So we didn't really know what happened to our dad, right? Because one day he's great, and then the next day he's dead. He's dead.
And that was here locally?
That was here locally in Santa Ana. We found him, you know? So we thought someone drugged them. You know, my dad always lived his life to the max, you know? And it was always nerve-wracking being around that guy because you don't know if you're going to get in a fight. You don't know if you're going to do some shit. You know? He was always out there, you know? So I'm like, man, did someone drug him? We didn't know what the cause of death was, right? So in the next month, right, when someone is banging in the back of my windows, I'm like, shit, they probably came for me. Right?
So a lot of thoughts came through my mind.
A lot of shit came through my mind. And I'm like, I go to my gun safe where I have guns that with permit and everything, but I had a whole bunch of them. I grab one of the guns, right? It doesn't even have any bullets or anything, right? I grab the gun. I go outside and I'm like, if whoever is here, leave. I have a gun. Nothing. I go in the back and I'm like paranoid, still recovering because I had been drinking, right? And I was knocked out. It was like 2-3 in the morning, right? And then I go to the front. Nothing. I go outside. Nothing. Then I hear knocking again in the front door and I open the door and I have the gun. And as soon as I recognized it was my ex-girlfriend, I lower the gun, right? but she was so drunk that she doesn't even remember how she got there. She was causing a scene and everything. They called the cops.
A neighbor or someone that heard. Yeah,
everybody. She saw the gun, started panicking. Oh, he has a gun. You know, she was so drunk, doesn't remember how she did it. She ran to the neighbors. He has a gun. He has a gun. And so they got me for assault with a gun in my own house.
Wow.
Clean record and everything. She testified on my behalf twice. But, I mean, obviously, you got to, the system is designated for them to win, right? I mean, when you go to court and you sit in there defending yourself, they have a whole panel of people that are judging you right there, right? But they're already looking at you like you're the bad person because why are you here defending yourself?
Right here?
Why are you here defending yourself, right? So you can, the system's already against you. Right. And they think that the DA is the pretty much the hero trying to protect the community. But at the end of the day, they don't really care about you like that.
They don't.
They're just trying to win. Right. And I was oblivious at that point because I didn't think that this was her system. I was like, man, the United States really offer us. And I gave him my offer it. But at the end of the day, it's like, no, it's not like that. Right. And you got to be more open minded. I mean,
this was your home, your residence, your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And they prosecuted you.
Right, right, right.
Unbelievable.
And she's like, hey, this guy has never touched me, you know?
And at that point, they were like, whatever.
Whatever, we got a testimony. Yeah, but the testimony, she was drunk when she was talking, doing all that. She's like, yeah, but we still got a testimony in some video. And they just kept on pursuing me. They threw the book at me. They wanted to give me 12 plus years and all that. It was something different, man. I mean, 12 plus years, you're clean record, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Clean record. They hit me with the 12 years and I had to fight it because I wasn't going to take 12 years.
Of course.
Or they gave me an offer or plead guilty to all these charges, which it was a whole bunch of strikes.
And you get what, two
No, years? You don't do any time. Plead guilty to all this stuff and you get no time. And I was like, how is that a deal? Like, I'm innocent. I'm going to fight for my innocence, right. You know? I mean, if I would have taken that deal, if I jaywalk, I'm going to go in, you know?
Right.
I mean?
You already had strikes.
I already had strikes.
Even
anything
you didn't
I
serve
do.
Time.
Exactly. I already had all Holy these strikes. Shit. So they shoot you stupid deals like that. At the end of the day, you're like, no.
It's not a deal.
No, it's not really a deal for you, right? Like I said, the system, if anybody catches the freaking case out there, get some good lawyers or, you know, at least educate yourself on this because.
Absolutely.
I wasn't really thinking much of it, man. And like, I'm thinking, man, this is an easy case. I didn't do any of this shit.
Right.
So I'm going to win. Right. Right. And the system must see that I'm innocent. I'm going to win, whatever. When in 2016, I fought my case for about 2 years. And then I ended up losing the case. And so I did 3 years in state prison.
Wow.
All while the COVID started. So COVID haven't started yet, okay. Right? But it was about to start. I didn't know, right? And this is crazy because when you go into prison, I was here in county is one thing, but you're in prison now, right? They have you in a group. I remember they had us in a group of people. There was a guy with no eyes and you can see everything. You know what I mean? It was bad. And I'm sitting there. I was the last one to get registered, right, in prison. And they make you sign a whole bunch of paperwork, right? And one of the papers that they make you sign is this thing that says, hey, if there's like a world war or whatever, we're going to come and kill you here. There's like any pandemics or any of this shit. You know what I mean? If there's any of this, we're going to, you know, and then we basically have the right to come and shoot you and go to war. Right. And I'm like, I'm not going to sign this. They're like, well, you're going to have to sign it anyways, but there's not going to be any pandemics or any of that stuff. Come on, man. That's what the officers told me, right?
That's actually in writing.
It's in writing, man.
The state wrote that in.
The state, it's in writing. If anything, we're allowed to come and shoot you, gas you, whatever it is. They'll take your life. That's introduction to that, you know?
Wow.
I mean, obviously prison was a whole different other story. You know, I went, you go through a lot of stuff, but I mean, I had been used to living and doing whatever I wanted at such a young age, right? That I've never had my freedom completely taken away from me, right?
Right.
And it's not just your freedom because you think you're out here free, right? But the reality is that you're a slave in here, right? Or a slave to all your emotions, right? People can't hold their emotions back,
right?
Right? They can't quiet them down. They're out there speaking with emotions. And I'm like, come down. So when I went into prison, it was probably one of the best things that happened to me.
Really?
Because of what I learned in there, right? I had lost everything, 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 but I found myself. You know, because you're just so busy going through life, doing all kinds of stuff, putting in work, having companies, having this, having that, doing everything, that you really just get pushed left and right, right? And in life, you're going like this, and sometimes your past pulls you back, or distractions pulls you side to side, and you're just doing this all through life, right?
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what it was, what freedom really was, right? And I didn't know what complete freedom was, right? I was out here physically free, but in reality, I was partying too much. I was a slave to drinking and partying, right? Mentally, I wasn't where I was supposed to be doing, you know? And at the end of the day, you know, when God wants you to learn a lesson, you're going to learn.
Yeah.
And he had sent me so many warnings that I wasn't listening, you know? So I remember when I got sentenced, man, I was praying, right? This is something that I had done. I was praying, and I'm in the bus, and I'm going to prison, you know? And I was like, man, God, please send me something. Like, come on, like, God, you know, you can't see shit on the bus because it's all blacked out. You only have like a little space to see, right? And I was driving off of Bristol, and there's the college right there, right? And in the top, I see, just sit back and enjoy the ride. And that was the college right here in Santa Ana College, something about their studies. But that's the message that I got. Just sit back and enjoy the ride. And I was praying for a message. I saw that. At this point, I'm like, God's got me. And no matter what it is, I'm going to do it. Right? My life is basically in God's hand at that point.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Deep.
Yeah, man. I mean,
But you got that message.
Yeah.
Did it make it easier?
Well, prison, I was locked up during lockdown, right?
Okay. So whether you were there or at home, it was the same shit.
It was like a jail inside of a jail inside of another jail.
Wow.
You know? Because when the pandemic hit, we're like, fuck, we're getting shot. We're going to get killed. We're going to do all this shit. We signed that paperwork, right? No one's getting anything. No one's getting any action, right? No one's getting any phone calls, right?
No
one's getting
yard work, nothing, no yard time, nothing.
Nothing. People wouldn't even show up to work because we'd be locked up all the time.
So there was no guards, minimal.
People wouldn't even come because they're like, shit, the whole world's going crazy, right? And you have no news, no nothing. So imagine everything's just getting to you and you're locked up, right? And so no phone calls, no nothing for months at a time. You don't know when the next time was going to be it. So a lot of people have gone to prison, but not during lockdown.
Wow.
Right? It was like completely being isolated. So I read hundreds of books, right? I realized what you say has an effect on people, because I was in a dorm with 20 people. So if I gave someone advice, you would see if that advice worked right away. You know what I mean? Like I remember one time this big Persian guy was there. He asked me for some advice. I'm like, stop being a pushover. Well, then what happens next? He stopped being a pushover, but he socked somebody else. I was like, shit. You know what I mean? Right here, when you give someone advice, you know, they go out and about, and it's a big ass world. Right. You don't really see what you're doing. You know what I mean?
You saw it right there.
You saw it right there and there. You're giving somebody advice. So imagine you're a coach. So imagine seeing everything happen to you in front of your eyes. I'm like, okay, I can give life or death with this mouth. You know what I mean? I got to make sure that I speak right. You know what I mean? And that was quite an experience, actually.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So you were there 3 years, you get out. What's it like when you got out?
So when I get out, man, this is funny, because like 3 weeks before I get out, I tear my Achilles tendon.
How'd you do that?
They had given us a little yard time. So we was playing basketball. And so it felt like someone hit me in the back, and I turn around and there's nobody there. And I'm like, what the hell? I can't move my leg. and you're in prison, man, you can't act like a punk in there, especially not in motion, or they'll whoop your ass. You know? So you got, I walked around with a torn Achilles for a week, just muscling it through, just going through it. Damn. Until my foot was all purple. And I remember it was one of the black guys like, bro, I'm going to go man down for you because this shit is nasty. You know, it's purple. You got to. So he went man down for me and they took me in. They basically tested it. And the next day they sent me in for surgery. Well, yeah. So when I get out, I had been gone for a long time, you know, so. It was almost like a way of God saying, hey, I'm going to let you get out, but you're going to have to take it very easy because a lot of shit has happened and I can't allow you to be bouncing off the walls with all that energy.
Prepping you for it.
Yes. So I got out in crutches, right? I mean, obviously the first person that hits me up when I get here is my accountant. He's calling me and I'm like, listen, you're calling me. It's regarding money. I don't really care about money. I just got out of prison. I just care about being free. This is where I want to be. You know, he's like, no, you really have to know what's happening. You know what I mean? And he's the accountant for my company. And he's the accountant for a lot of other people that I know that are in the business and different mm-hmm. types of business. Mm-hmm. But everyone was just surviving on PPL loans or whatever. And so he's like, listen, you know, basically all this money went, you know, was spent by my ex-partner. And I'm like, I don't really care. You know what I mean? As long as he got an opportunity to live, who cares? Well, we can rebuild this, right?
Yeah.
But little did I know, I mean, my brother had changed everything under his name and obviously relationships went sideways. But I was just thankful that my family got taken care of during my time that I was there, right? Because at the end of the day, I built everything from scratch and I have everything right here so I can rebuild it again, right? I've been out for what now, 3 years and a half now. And I built the mortgage company, right? I built the agent and company. Oh, you're a part of, right? The Jews, the lead generation company, right? And then we have a construction company as well, right? Yeah. So everything is kind of synergetically feeding each other in a way where it doesn't really have to, we don't have to work much because we're feeding each other.
Right.
Realtors feed the loan officers and so on and so forth.
Right. So now if there's one lesson that you've gotten in life, mm-hmm. the most valuable lesson, what would you say that is?
This is exactly why we came up with no quitters, right? Don't quit.
Don't quit.
Don't quit. At the end of the day, there's something always there, right? The only way out of it is going through it.
Right.
Right. And so I've never quit, never ever thought about quitting, right? And that's basically the reason why we started No Quitters Podcast, because I see a lot of people going through the same thing, but some people cave in,
yep.
right? They crumble.
Yep.
And some of them succeed. And it's just at the end of the day, how you handle things. The style in which you have of handling things makes a big difference.
So what has to happen for a person to be the one that keeps going? What has to happen to people in general for everyone to become that person? What do you think it is?
I think people need to just stop thinking of quitting too fast, right? They got to start thinking about where their goals are, right? So it's hard. It's kind of hard to push yourself if you don't even know where you're going, right? Let me push myself where, right? Why am I even doing this?
No goals.
There's no goals. There's no vision. There's none of that stuff. And I hear people always getting, I'm burnt out. I'm this and that. And I'm like, well, what's your vision? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
They have no idea why they have no idea. What they're doing.
They have no idea.
They don't know what their why is.
Right. And at the end of the day, it's not how many days you put in, is what you put in your days, right? Because it's so easy to be at the office for 8 hours, not doing shit, but you were still here 8 hours. And when you leave, you're like, hey, I was at the office for 8 hours.
Right.
You weren't doing shit, but hey, I was at the office for 8 hours. And kind of accumulate everything, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you were to do something, change something, I would think about something that John Maxwell said is every day you're either preparing or you're repairing, right? So every day you're either preparing for what's coming or you're repairing what you messed up, right?
Oh.
Yeah. And so I always took that into account and account myself because it's kind of true for me, right? Everybody has their own life and everything, but yeah, every day I'm preparing or repairing what I've done. right? And our day sometimes go in repairing or, and that's it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But exactly why we came up with No Quitters, man.
No Quitters. So can you tell us what your why is in life? What's your why?
My why is all you guys, right? I want to make sure that I am able to teach and give everything that I have, right? Not just because of what I say. I've been through all the experiences, right? This is just a little glimpse of what I've been through, but there's a lot more shit that I've been through that I don't really talk about, right? But
right.
We can dive in. We don't have enough time for that.
There's not enough time.
But there's a lot of stuff, and I want to give it from my experiences, right? It's easy to be theoretical about things,
right.
But I'm coming from experience.
Right.
I'm coming from that.
You've lived it.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to share it.
And I want to make sure that I share it with you guys so that people can see it and kind of use it as a stepping stone to their next step. That's my motivation. Helping as much people get as what they want. And in return, obviously, we get what we want.
Beautiful. So if you want to give us some last thoughts, what would you tell the public?
Last thoughts on this? I mean, just keep your head up. Keep pushing forward, right? You draw the line on what you consider to be failure, and you draw the line on what you consider to be success, and always expand it, right? There's more. You are more than what you think you are.
Yeah.
You're way more capable of things than what you think you are. You're way more gifted, talented, stronger than where you think you are.
What a perfect finish, bro. Thank you.
Wow, guys. I mean, you guys seen it. I think we're going to need an episode number 2 for you, man. We already kind of consumed the whole time.
Absolutely. We can do another one, man.
Right. So let's just, we'll dive into, you guys kind of had a glimpse of me. I want to see where you come from, right?
Absolutely.
That we can relate it to our viewers, and they can see why we came up with this together. You guys are going to see two different men, different perspective, different character, different styles, different everything, give you their point of view and the way we handle situations in life, right? Not to mention all the interviews that we've done so far. They've been so powerful.
Yes. We've had some pretty amazing talent, some serious success stories that you guys are going to get to enjoy that we've already done. Absolutely. They're going to be coming up, guys.
Absolutely, guys. And if you guys haven't already done so, or you guys haven't heard of it, the podcast, the Instagram for our podcast is No Quitters, just like that. No Quitters. You guys can go out there and follow us.
Can't wait. Looking forward to it, guys. Take care.